your home of the Columbus Blue Jackets. Sports Radio 97.1 The Fan.
Find the trailer shot. Score!
Listening to The Inside Edge with Jody Shelley and Bob McElligan. This is your inside perspective on the NHL, players, the Blue Jackets, and more.
Brought to you by Nationwide, AEP, and Ohio Health. March with us.
Here's former Jacket Jody Shelley and the voice of the Jackets, Bob McElligan.
Welcome to Vancouver, British Columbia, where the Blue Jackets are getting set to take on the Canucks tomorrow night. I'm Bob McElligan alongside of Jody Shelley, and this is The Inside Edge. Tomorrow night will be game two of a three-game trip. The Blue Jackets started this trip last night in Edmonton. They weren't looking good early on. They were being outshot by a lot in the first period, but they came out of the period having scored one goal on their first two shots. Matt Calvert tallied that goal, and it was 1-0. But then there was a very short span of time in the second period where the Edmonton Oilers took over, and they scored four times, went on to add one in the third period, and won by the final of 5-1. And, Jody, that first game back out of the All-Star break is a challenge. Coming out west is a challenge. And the Blue Jackets looked like they were meeting that challenge, at least after 20 minutes. But, as I said, Edmonton just kind of turned it around pretty quickly in the second.
You know what? They did. And it was one of those things where Connor McDavid makes his return, and we were excited to see this player. I mean, he's a generational player. He's a superstar in the National Hockey League at the ripe old age of 19. I think he's played 15 games now, including the one last night, in this league. And, you know, the Blue Jackets wanted to win, but as fans of the game, we wanted to see what this guy was going to bring. And he changed the game with a couple big plays and then that ridiculous goal, which is being played over and over here. And we're in Vancouver, Canada. The coverage is crazy, so they're all over that goal. And, you know, I thought the Blue Jackets did play well, but, you know, it just, again, that small segment. And we heard the word. We just heard John Tortorella speak this afternoon, and it's that inconsistent word. And every team that struggles, every team that has the ups and downs, it's the inconsistency of the 60-minute hockey game that we've talked about all year. And again, last night it caught up with the Blue Jackets in that short span, as you said.
And that's been a problem that this team has had, not just this year. It goes back to last year, and even at points the previous year, well, they'll have that three-minute segment that they kind of take off, or they get out of their structure, and all of a sudden, this is one of those teams that it seems like when they get hurt in that, they don't just get hurt for one goal. It's at least two, sometimes three, last night more than that.
Yeah, and, you know, there was a great period right after the Oilers went up where the Blue Jackets pushed. There were some good opportunities, and Talbot locked it down for his team. They had, like, 28 turnovers or something like that, the Edmonton Oilers did. They were playing kind of loose hockey. So the Blue Jackets did have opportunities, didn't cash in, couldn't get back in the game. You have to credit Talbot and that high strike offense that they had. And you're right, it's not just one blip. I mean, you can live with one goal, maybe two, because you're going to get back with one goal. But when you give up that third, fourth goal, boy, that was didn't feel like that type of game, that 5-1 hockey game. And it's because it was a short span that all that work was done.
You talked about Connor McDavid. This is the guy that his arrival in the league has been talked about for years. And then in this past year's draft in June, he was the first overall pick. There was no suspense, no surprise. He was going to be the guy. Edmonton gets him. A lot of people said, well, they've gotten so many first-round picks. They've got Taylor Hall. They've got Jordan Eberle, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. They've gotten Neil Yakupov. They're getting all the same kind of player. Well, this guy transcends all of those players with what he does. And I made the comment last night that he misses the 37 games, and he comes back and he scores in his very first game. He finished with a 3-point night. And growing up outside of Pittsburgh and remembering Mario Lemieux in his heyday, and he would miss these long spans of time, whether it was his back or whether it was the Hodgkin's disease that he had, he would go for weeks and not play, months. Heck, he even retired for a couple years and then came back. But it seemed like every time he came back, he was going to score in that game. You would bet on the fact that he was going to make something happen. And I felt that those people that were in that building last night, and it was packed to the rafters, if he turns out to be this generational player they're talking about, all of those people will say, I remember the first time he got hurt and he missed 37 games, and he came right back and he scored a highlight goal and he had a 3-point night. That's just how I felt about it. Do you agree?
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I mean, it's a little rusty, only 3 points, you know. I hear what you're saying. No, you're right. I mean, he came back, and right from the first shift. I mean, Ryan Murray was not ready for that speed. I guess it's overwhelming is what the players say, like how quick he closes in on you. Ryan Murray took a penalty first shift when Connor McDavid wound it up. And it was only three strides, I think, and he was on his way past Ryan Murray. You know, just it's one of those guys that, right, you have to adjust for that speed and be prepared. Korpisalo on that highlight reel goal where McDavid goes around, Jack Johnson and Justin Falk. Korpisalo said it was a one-on-three, and then the next thing, this kid's standing on top of me. Like, it just hadn't transpired that quick. So he's quick. He does things. For me, it's amazing the little things that he can do and keep his speed. Like, you can try things and focus on working with a puck for periods of time. You on a piece of ice with a puck and no one else around, standing still, and feel pretty good about yourself. But try to do it at, I mean, I don't know. If I was going that fast, or you or I, Bob, we'd probably hurt ourselves, first of all. But try to do it with a puck and then everyone else trying to hit you. You know, Justin Falk on that play was trying to jump up and nail McDavid. He would have put him in the fourth row, but Falk fell down trying to step up, which worked out perfect for McDavid. But it's that speed that throws you off. So he's a player that is going to be around for a long time. But the impact, you talked about Mario, you talk about Gretzky. There's something different about the way they see the game and the skill set they have all the way around.
You just described Justin Falk. That might be the story of my life. Fell down trying to step up. Simple as that. But all in all, for the Blue Jackets, it's back to it's kind of back to the drawing board. But one place that, to me, it's getting better day in and day out is right between the pipes with Jonas Korpisalo. This kid continues to impress. Let's be honest. It wouldn't have been a 1-0 game in favor of the Blue Jackets at the end of the first period had he not been incredible in the first 10 minutes.
Yeah, no, you're completely right. There was going to be a push from the Oilers. And listen, they're a high-risk, high-reward team that's getting their superstar back at home just before they go on a long road trip here. There was going to be a big push from that team. And the only reason why the Blue Jackets weathered that storm was Korpisalo. Quick pad saves, controlled his rebounds, battled in front with the players to make those saves. He was on point and did an excellent job in that first period. Kept it close, and then in the second and third, too many opportunities, too many odd man rushes, too many plays around the net that didn't get stopped. And really the skill and speed of McDavid is what changed that game.
Do you think that now, what, a dozen games for him starting in this league, do you think the players have transitioned from looking at him as this young kid they didn't know a lot about to their guy that they trust and they know what he's going to bring night in and night out?
Yeah, I you know what, I really do, and I think it has to do with not just the way he plays on the ice, but his personality in the locker room. There's value to it as a teammate, seeing a player have that much confidence. Not that he's walking around thinking he owns the place, but he's confident in his ability. He can laugh at himself. He's respectful to the game and kind of the pecking order of the dressing room where he fits in, and he appreciates everything about this great game. And I think as a teammate, when you put all that together, that's behind the scenes. And then he goes out on the ice and still has that nonchalant approach to the game, just stops the puck, he's athletic, and he works hard. Those are all, check the box on all those, that if you're going to be a good teammate and try to be an excellent pro, working hard and your attitude is everything. And you can say it and try to think you're doing it, but this kid is really, really bringing that to this organization. And I agree. It's not number one goalie's out. Curtis McElhinney here in Vancouver getting some extra reps, trying to get ready to play. It's no excuse for this team to be the loss last night is not on the goaltender. You would think, okay, third goaltender, you know, that's why that team is losing. No, it's inconsistencies in front of him.
I love the story you told me yesterday about Jonas when you asked him how he spent his All-Star break. It is just once you get to know him, and you will, because he's going to be here, and he'll be at autograph signings, and he'll be at appearances, and you'll get a chance to talk to him, and we're fortunate that we get to tell everybody what he said when you asked him how his break was.
Well, I mean, a couple guys come back with, you know, nice tans, and guys look relaxed, and guys have spent time with their family. Well, Jonas is called up from Lake Erie Monsters. And so I said, how was your break? Where did you go? I said, no, this is what I said. Sorry, I said, you didn't get a suntan. He said, hard to get a suntan in Cleveland. I said, well, you didn't get sent down. He said, no, I had to go pay some bills, do some paperwork, and do laundry. bad accent by me, but you get the idea. So, you know, remarkable that he got in his car in the break, took the time to go back to Cleveland, tie up loose ends, because, you know, when you get called up, it's like, all I need is my gear and my credit card, and that's pretty, I can get a toothbrush when I'm up there, you know, and toothbrushes are better in the NHL city anyways, right? So, interesting that that's how he spent his break, tying up those loose ends. And I like the way he says things, because he always says them with that positive attitude and kind of a chuckle at himself.
Yeah, he's got that dry sense of humor that draws you in. When you go back to and look at your playing career, because as we're talking about a goaltender, usually goaltenders, there's a bond between those two guys, but then the other guys always look at the goaltenders like, well, they're a little bit strange. I mean, the mindset is to have people fire pucks at you. But were there any goalies that you played with that you had a really good relationship with, and both on and off the ice?
Well, yeah. I mean, Brian Boucher was a guy that, I mean, he was a backup goalie. He's a great friend, and he was a fantastic goaltender, excellent teammate, and worked hard. Other than that, I mean, I played with some European goalies. Jean-Sébastien Giguère and Junior was a kid that was a kid. What am I saying? He's my age. He's a guy that
you were both kids at the time.
Right. When I think back, 18, 19, and 20 years old, I guess I was a kid. You know, he's a guy that on the same page. But most goalies are on their own. They spend most time. I guess in this case, you've got fellow countrymen, the Finns, and I guess the big rival country in the case over in Scandinavia is Sweden, in Forsberg, Wenberg, and Carlson. So that group sticks together. But no, they're pretty much on their own. Brzgalov was definitely, he was on his own.
On his own program, unfortunately. In fact, it was a program that did him in, a TV program that wound up doing him in on that HBO special. All right, we've got a big show coming up for you. We have got a former Blue Jacket we're going to have on the air with us a little bit later on. It's basically a Where Are They Now segment, so you want to stay tuned to listen for that. Coming up next, we're going to talk about some league issues. Dennis Wiedemann got suspended today by the NHL. We'll tell you how long and give you our thoughts on it, and we'll be joined by Aaron Portsline of the Columbus Dispatch. He'll weigh in on that as well as we continue with the Inside Edge from Vancouver on 97.1 The Fan. Welcome back to the Inside Edge. Bob McElligott and Jody Shelley with you from Vancouver, where the Blue Jackets will take on the Canucks tomorrow. We're joined right now by Aaron Portsline, who covers the Blue Jackets beat for the Columbus Dispatch. Guys, let's talk about some stuff going on in the league. The big story today is Dennis Wiedemann's suspension has come down from the NHL. 20 games he has been given for hitting an official, a linesman, and taking him out. Jody, too much, too little? What do you think?
I think it's a little heavy. I mean, I don't – there's no time an official should be hit. I agree with that. But looking at the play, I honestly felt that – Wiedemann ran out of space getting to the bench, and as he got in that area where the linesman was, he seemed startled to me, and just kind of to me it looked like he wanted to go down the left wall, and then just to get the linesman out of the way, he kind of just, it was a terrible hit. You should never push a referee. You should always have respect for the referee, all that stuff, 100%. But I think 20 games might be a little heavy. I was thinking more 10 to 15, that's a big chunk of the season. I mean, you know, the message had to be sent. I know that the Referees Association was involved. I know that they've, you know, not always been treated fairly or not felt like they've been treated fairly by the National Hockey League. I get it. But my first reaction was it was a little much.
Yeah, and I agree with you, and I still think that he got hit so hard in the corner, the way he came out of the corner, I don't know that he was of sound-minded body, as you would say. So I think it's a little bit much, too. But, Aaron, as Jody just said, you know, the officials have a union, too. And I'm sure that there was say in that. As a matter of fact, before the NHL officials said anything, the NBA Referees Association was talking about it and saying, basically, kind of saying there better be a big suspension for this, because we can't have the message in whatever sport it is that it's okay to hit an official. How much politicking was done in this thing, do you think?
Well, I think there's a lot of politicking. And also, I think there's also, I don't know if you call it politicking, but I think there's some planning on the league's behalf. I think they fully expect I think they expect Wiedemann to appeal this. And maybe with the appeal, it goes down to 12 or 15 games. I honestly don't have a problem with the 20. I was just thinking as we're talking here, what did Michael Pekka get? Do you remember Michael Pekka? First game of the season, I think it was. Maybe 9-10. Put his hand on an official. And he ended up getting suspended, which I thought was absurd. But that, I think whenever something like this happens, the league feels like they have to, like, almost overstate the fact. I thought Weidman, it looked to me like he was frustrated, angry, and was going to hit the next person that he saw hard. And that happened to be a linesman. I don't think he was just trying to get him out of the way to make a change or to avoid too many men. I think he took out his frustrations on the official. And so I don't really have a problem with the 20, but I won't be surprised if it ends up 12 or 15.
Yeah, that's a good point. We always forget about that. They kind of negotiated down 5 games for Michael Pekka, Jody says.
Yeah, and I don't remember. It was nothing like that. I mean, it wasn't even a forcible push, if I'm recalling the play. I didn't think he was going to get suspended at all, and he got 5 games. So, again, I think they try to really drop the hammer in these cases just to send a message.
Yeah, and send a message. That's really what it is all about. It's not just with officials. It's kind of, I guess if you go too low to begin with, then you're setting a bar, right, Jody?
Well, yeah, but, I mean, I think 10 games is a lot of games, isn't it? Am I way off base? But 10 National Hockey League games tells me it's severe. I mean, I don't know, but, you know, it, to me, the hit was, it wasn't like he planned it. It wasn't an intent to hurt the official. To me, it was a bang-bang play. And I know the hit, he was probably chapped about it in the corner when he got hit and no call. But, listen, I don't understand the 20 games, but the league has, they've done a good job at setting precedent, I guess. You're sending messages not only to the league, the fans, but how about the kids? I mean, there's kids that watch every single thing. We talked about this the other day. We have players on the Blue Jackets that after a bad play, they bang the boards. And, you know, that's a little thing, but kids are watching. So the kids are watching. If you're hitting an official, they're going to copy, and I think it's a good message by the league, I guess.
I want to compliment you because when we talked before the All-Star game about John Scott and his inclusion in the All-Star game, you came right out and said he's going to be fine. He understands his role. He's a big guy. He knows how he has to play. 2 goals in the first game for the Pacific Division. In the second one, a pretty sweet one where he had to avoid Matt Duchene on a breakaway. Yeah, he roofed the thing. And he winds up being the MVP of the All-Star weekend. It was really a movie come to life, wasn't it?
It was probably the best reality TV show I've seen ever. You know, I mean, sports is one of the best reality TV. You can't plan what's going to happen in sports. But I think everyone, I don't know, I watched the entire game. I mean, I didn't miss a second of the game. And I think a lot of people felt that way. Not just the John Scott, the 3-on-3. But you know what's interesting? I would like to know how nervous he was. Like, I know there's, like, you know, your first NHL game, your first situation around All-Stars, maybe doing a shootout, like, in front of 17,000 people. Guys get nervous. I mean, that's nerve-wracking. It's you showing your skill. Don't fall down. Don't miss the net. Oh, yeah, and try to score. I mean, honestly, there's a lot of pressure. John Scott, 3-on-3, rubbing elbows with the best in the National Hockey League. He must have been so nervous. And, boy, just the way he carried himself, for him to go to that game from the minor league spot, we're all humble people. And I don't know, maybe after the momentum I would have gone, but it would have been I would have had to have been pushed to go. And I think John Scott was pushed to go, and it couldn't have worked out any better. It just makes you smile. It was he's a guy that plays in the National Hockey League. I love the – it was in the Players' Tribune, the article about he's at the top level. He's played in the NHL. Don't discredit that he does have a little bit of hockey skill. And 2 goals. I mean, you couldn't have written that any – I mean, you could have written a hat trick, and that would have been unbelievable. But 2 goals is pretty unbelievable.
But Aaron, my question, though, is how did the NHL wind up looking as good as they did when it was all said and done? Because let's be honest, that got ugly. It was a bad situation, and had it not been for the fans, and I guess this league is driven by its fans, but they really took the initiative with that Free John Scott hashtag to where finally somebody, as I said, if it was a movie, there would be some little kind of a nerdy guy in a corner office that would say, we can't let him play in this game. And then that guy would get punched in the mouth when they're giving the check at the end, and then the guy would pick him up like the end scene in Major League. But all in all, how did they wind up looking good out of this whole thing?
Well, we don't know who the nerdy guy is, but that guy does exist. And everyone's trying to figure out who he is. What I love about this is every great story has to have an antagonist. It has an antagonist. And in this case, the antagonist is the league. The league, look, I think, I mean, the game itself came out looking great. To me, the league looked, I mean, if you paid attention close to the story the way that I guess we would, the league didn't look good at all in a lot of turns. I mean, saying to the player, do you want your kids to be proud of you? That is freaking horrible. Putting a black jersey on him, orchestrating a trade, sending him to the minors. They went way out of the way to avoid this. That's part of what made it special. And what I liked on the whole is that the fans in Nashville deserve a lot of credit. Hockey fans deserve a lot of credit. For me, this was the fans reminding the league that they may run the league, but they don't run the sport, and this is the people's game. And the people took the game back this week. That was the best All-Star game maybe ever in terms of being competitive. But the story, that will never be recreated, that storyline. Now watch the league try to force that every year. They'll have John Scott, the gargantuan Rudy. Because that's what it felt like. It felt like the whole league was, and they did lift him up at the end of the game. It was amazing, but the league needs to get some stuff together because they tried to ruin what turned out to be a great weekend, and now he's the first star. They're on board now, baby, because they couldn't help but see what happened in Nashville.
Yeah, and they probably will make a movie out of that whole thing for real, and that's the way it'll go down. And as you said, the great thing about Nashville is that's a market that has been underappreciated, where especially a lot of Canadian markets are saying they don't belong in the league. For years and years they did that. So for it to happen in that city where they can appreciate being the underdog, and, oh, by the way, they're an old East Coast League city, East Coast Hockey League city, when it goes back to it. They're all about the Fighters in Nashville, so they appreciated it, and it all worked out. Aaron, thank you very much. Jody and I will be back with more of the Inside Edge. As a matter of fact, we're going to do a Where Are They Now segment. A former Blue Jacket is going to join us when we return on 97.1 The Fan. Welcome back to the Inside Edge. I'm Bob McKelligan, joined by Jody Shelley. You know, the thing is about traveling is you never know who you'll run into. And I don't know what it is about you, Jody, but in the last couple of years, we've gone into Edmonton, Alberta, and I've seen guys that I haven't seen for years. I mean, years. A couple of years ago, it was Kent Simpson, who was with us in Johnstown when we were in the East Coast Hockey League. And today, you've done it to me again.
Well, Bob, there's a few interesting things about traveling, obviously. But, the Blue Jacket alumni is growing. And these guys that we run into are all such great guys, and we're proud that they've played for the Blue Jackets. You know, we saw Sean Pronger a couple years ago in Anaheim. And, it's just one of those things that we're a tight fraternity, and these guys keep an eye on the Blue Jackets. So welcome our guest.
Well, I will do that. And as the guy that's in charge of the alumni, see, you can see that he's really on this job and doing a great job of it. We are joined by Matt Davidson today. And Matt thinks that people are going to go, who? Matt Davidson? There's no way, buddy. They remember you in Columbus.
I appreciate that, Bob. I mean, I'm going to call BS on you. But you know what? I appreciate that nonetheless.
So it was a long time ago that you were in Columbus. I'm sure it seems like only yesterday, though, doesn't it?
You know what? I was thinking about this last night. I can remember just about everything from those first, two or three years we were there. I can remember the locker room. I remember just the weight room. I remember where the TVs were in the locker room. Like, I can remember every detail about that. Because that's, Jody and I were talking before you got here. Like, that's how awesome it was. We were there. The building was packed every night. People knew who we were. It was fantastic. And those are definitely times I will never forget.
Now, if correct me if I'm wrong, and I'm trying to reach into my own memory, but you were with Buffalo. You were in Rochester before you signed with the Blue Jackets and then split time between Columbus and Syracuse.
Yeah, well, I was drafted by Buffalo, and then I spent 3 years kind of in the minors, and they had good teams, and it didn't look like I was going to get a chance, which was fine. And then the expansion draft happened, and I ended up in some kind of a trade, you know, ended up with Columbus, and that was, you know, the best thing for me because, you know, it was, you know, I wasn't good enough to crack the Buffalo lineup, and we was a log jam behind some guys. So when, you know, my agent told me you've been traded to Columbus, you know, it was definitely one of the turning points for me.
So, Jody, you guys in the same position, an expansion team, starting, more jobs, more opportunities, and both you guys able to take advantage of that?
Well, yeah, I think we're both lucky to be a part of the Columbus Blue Jackets early. I mean, we were talking about Lyle Odelein before we came on air, and it's like the value in playing in that old school. I mean, he's an old school guy. He was our leader when we got to the NHL. And I think a lot of these teams now lack that veteran, that guy that does things for the team all the time. And I feel fortunate, I think Matt does too, that we got to see that old school regime and kind of carry that on and have a few laughs about some of the stories, because I don't think the young guys would believe the old school stuff now. But, you know, we were fortunate to be a part of the expansion. And, you know, Syracuse, we had fun in Syracuse together too. That was a big part of our professional careers, playing in the minors. And Matt went on after the Blue Jackets and played over in Europe. Actually, did you go right to Europe after? Oh, you went to Lowell, and then you ended up over in Germany and Sweden. What was that experience like? And Finland.
Yeah. You know, it was fantastic. So it was the lockout year, I think, because the year after Columbus, I went down, signed with Calgary, got hurt, basically spent the whole year in the minors, and then it was the lockout coming, so I ended up signing in Germany. Went over there and just kind of fell in love with it. I mean, it's a different lifestyle. It's less games, a little bit less travel. And, you know, it was just kind of one of those things where we ended up loving it in the state. And, you know, we had some great times. It was 2 years in Germany, you know, a couple years in Sweden, a year in Finland, a couple years in even a place like Denmark, where you wouldn't think it would be a hockey place. I mean, now they've got some talent. They're starting to show a little bit. But, you know what, it was a great way to end. Like, I think we spent 7 years over there, and it was, you know, it was awesome.
56 games with the Blue Jackets. Tell me about your first game and your first goal with the organization.
Well, it's funny you should mention that. My first goal was here, actually, in Edmonton. Again, we were in a bit of a losing streak at the time, believe it or not. And I'd gotten called up and had played a game in Calgary the day before. We'd lost, and we come up here, and, you know, we kind of needed a win. And, it ended up being, I can still see the play in my head. I'm going to recreate it for those fans who are dying to know about my first goal. it was a 2-on-1 with me and Lyle Odelein, and I wasn't much of a disher. And so I looked and I saw him going, and the captain at the time, Jason Smith, slid. So I was pretty much screwed. That pass wasn't going to cross. So I said, all right, well, you might as well shoot it. And it went in 5-hole on Tommy Sallow, and I'm forever grateful for Tommy for not having a stick down. So
so one of the things I love the most is not only do you remember the situation, but who every guy was, where they were, when they left their feet, because those are things that stick with you. You never forget those things, do you?
Never. Absolutely never. And yeah, I can even remember, I think we ended up winning 2-1. I can even remember that Robert Kron, of all people, scored the second goal, and we won the game 2-1. And just the sense of, you know, happiness after the game among the locker room, you know, it was awesome. And it was, you know, I happened to have family in the stands. It was one of those, like, you couldn't write a better script, basically, for me. And, you know, I was very lucky, and, you know, I remember that day fondly for sure.
We're talking with former Blue Jacket Matt Davidson, who we caught up with in Edmonton on this road trip. And when you talk about those days, it was the early years of the franchise, as we said, and it was when the building was packed every night, and there was the excitement every night. And even though you were playing for a team that was part of an expansion and didn't have a lot of history, did it feel like that because of the electricity and the atmosphere you played in every night that you came to Nationwide Arena?
No, I mean, it was a weird sense. You knew it was new, but they treated you like they'd been around for years, right? And they were just so happy to meet you. You'd go to restaurants, people would come up to you and they say, hey, you know, nice to meet you, great game. Even if you lost, it didn't seem to matter. I'm sure the fans cared, but at the same time, the building was packed. And it was loud, and they were excited for everything. And it was just, I mean, the atmosphere around there, I remember I had friends who were playing on other teams, and they'd say, after they'd come to Columbus, is that's amazing. Like, and that was the atmosphere. It was one of those things that you just kind of never forget, just the noise and the excitement and just basically the overall happiness. Even though we weren't a great team, it was kind of, you know, it wasn't that important. The fact was that we were there and they appreciated us for being there. It was awesome.
Where, like, what are some of the restaurants? You remember? I'm kind of putting you on the spot here. Where would you hang out? I mean, there was Martini's. There was Morton's used to be there. The Always Easton. What was your one of your favorite hangouts there?
I used to love Martini's. Frankly, they had this bruschetta that I will still remember to the end of this day. And then so I used to go there a lot. Morton's was a bit out of my price range at the time. But when somebody like Lyle was buying or something like that, you know, we'd hit Morton's. I remember after practice, I don't know what's still around there, but there used to be a Chipotle right there.
Oh, it's still there?
Is it still there? God, we used to hit that a lot after practice. Yeah, free burritos. And I, you know, I spent a lot of time at the what was used to be the Crown Plaza. I don't know if that's still there.
Still there.
So, yeah. So, I think I, within walking distance, I could pretty much, you know, remember that that whole neighborhood pretty well. And there was the Frog Bear and Wild Boar or something like this. I don't know if that's still there.
No, that one's gone.
Yeah, that one's gone. That was, you know, and there was, it was crazy, but it was awesome.
Now, when you were up, how much did Jody help to, you know, see you around town and be kind of that ambassador that he now is? Unofficially then he was an ambassador, I would guess, right?
Oh, huge. I mean, it was, Jody was the man. He probably still is the man in town, but we used to, I remember me and the young guys, we would get called up, we'd literally be like, you know, hey, Jody, where are you going tonight, buddy? And we'd be like, because everybody knew him, and he'd get you into anywhere, and he knew everybody, and you just kind of were like, you just kind of follow along, and, you know, it was awesome. And he was always great about making sure, he'd give you a call in the hotel and say, look, you know, we're going out for dinner, do you want to come? Or we're doing this, do you want to come? You know, and for young guys in new cities and new situations, you know, that's the kind of thing that goes a long way.
Just showed your age. He said he'd give you a call in the hotel and not shoot you a text.
Yeah, I was trying to think if I had a cell phone. I think I might have had a cell phone, but I'm pretty sure I didn't know how to use it. So,
no. What do you remember about playing with Matt?
Well, I remember we had such a great group in Syracuse that when these guys came up, it was like him and Sean Pronger. Skilled guy. For me, I think we played together a little bit, but a guy that, I mean, would love to see more, had more an opportunity, obviously, with his skill, but for me, on a fourth line, to have a guy like that play with me, I'm pretty lucky, because we know me and David Ling would bang around out there, and you'd see Matt and you'd get back to the bench and be like, sorry, we didn't get you the puck. We didn't even really go after the puck out there. So you kind of feel bad for a guy like that that has to play with me. But, no, it was good. Great teammate. And I think that the bond in Syracuse, we were talking about the guys down there before, and just to see those guys and be around them at the NHL level, it's rewarding.
And you're one of those guys that when you'd play in the AHL, you'd be playing first and second line, getting a lot of minutes. And then, as Jody was just saying, you get called up to the NHL, and all of a sudden you get plopped onto a fourth line, few minutes. And that's an actual bigger challenge, isn't it, to be ready to go each and every shift?
It was, but I think you're so excited and yet nervous at the same time that it doesn't even matter. Like, I remember sitting there for like long stretches, if there would be power plays and, you know, you wouldn't play, which is, you know, justifiable, good coaching decision by the guys at the time. But, you know, and then when you get out there, you'd be so anxious to do something that you wouldn't even, you know, it wouldn't even occur to you that you hadn't played for 10 minutes, right? You were just so into the moment, and, you know, it helped that the fans were all going bananas. That when you got out there, you were so emotionally into the game that you totally forgot that your legs hadn't moved in 10 minutes. So
talking with Matt Davidson, former Blue Jacket, and tell us what you're doing now. What does your life entail now that you're a former NHL or former pro hockey player?
I'm trying to get as much mileage out of that as possible, to tell you the truth. So, like Jody said, so I went to Europe for 7 years, and then I retired going on 5 years, I think, and I spent a year, I had a young son, so I spent a year while my wife went back to work, kind of making sure he was all set, and then I realized that I needed something to do, and so I'd been doing some power skating and skill stuff in the city, and spending a lot of time on my skates, and I said, well, it'd be interesting if I could somehow combine this, so I went back to school to get my teaching degree, and I just crushed it. I went spring, summer, overload, every term just to get it done. Got it done in 2 years, and got hired right away, and so now I teach grade 5 and I run one of the hockey academies here in town. So it's been very nice.
Different path than you took when you got done playing, huh?
Well, yeah, I was telling Matt I got really lucky. But how was that for you, that going back to school? Like, I mean, you said you took a year and kind of just felt sorry for yourself, which is understandable because the lifestyle that we live in professional hockey, it's a dream. It's not reality at all. So back to reality, and good for you. You're a teacher now, but that must have been a tough adjustment to go back and hit the books.
Yeah, it was tough. And my parents had always stressed on me the importance of education. And, you know, when you're young, you're always like, well, why? I'm going to play in the NHL for 20 years and retire a millionaire. But, you know, reality kind of hits. And Jody and I were talking, and especially up here in Canada, there's so many guys with hockey backgrounds that you're not that unique, right? So you need something else. And I thought, well, I like working with kids. You know, I like doing the hockey. If there's a way I can combine the two and still get kind of a good career going, you know, that would be the way to do it. So I went back to school, and I was 33 in a class with 19 and 20-year-olds, so, you know, I didn't have a lot of friends. But, you know, but I was focused, and, you know, I got it done. And, yeah, it was challenging, but I think the end goal of being finished and moving on, I think, was enough to drive me to get through.
Now, before I got here for this conversation, had you already come up with a way to get this guy to come back and play in some kind of an alumni game?
Well, no, we just broken the conversation on alumni. But, you know, with our alumni, and it's being a small local, I told them about our 6 local members. There's definitely talk of bringing guys back. So if we would love to include him in that conversation. I mean, it's one of those things that our Blue Jacket family is small but growing. And I'm telling you, the fan base, there's loyal listeners that know who you are, even though you don't think so.
And would it be exciting for you to get the chance to come back at some point?
Oh, I think so. We were talking so many memories about the times there and just all the good things that happened. And now, as you know, as a dad, and we have a 10-year-old, and the coach has hockey, and he's getting into it. He would love that kind of stuff, right? And you kind of forget about it as your life kind of moves on and you're focused on whatever teaching or whatever, those kind of things. But, I mean, those are the memories that kind of, and the experiences that kind of shape you. And I think, you know, to go back and to revisit some of those, you know, I think it would be a chance of a lifetime, and I definitely look forward to it.
Well, Matt, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us on this show. It is great to see you, and I'm sure the fans do enjoy hearing from you.
Yes, thanks for doing this. I'm glad you reached out on Twitter, and we caught up here in downtown Edmonton. It's always a treat, isn't it, Bob?
Absolutely, it is. See, you went from the hotel phone now to Twitter. See how quickly that advanced?
Yeah, that's amazing. Twitter is an amazing thing. So thanks, guys, for having me. I appreciate it very much.
That's former Blue Jacket Matt Davidson joining us here on the Inside Edge. We've got more after this on 97.1 The Fan. Getting ready to wrap up this week's edition of the Inside Edge. How great was it to catch up with Matt Davidson? I got to be honest with you. There are guys that you see and you work with, and then when they're done playing or they get traded or they leave or whatever, you don't know if you'll ever see those people again, and then they show up out of nowhere. It was great to sit down and talk to him, wasn't it?
It was so great. And, you know, hockey ends, and we talked about it. What are you going to do next? And Matt Davidson, he's found a nice little niche here, or there, sorry, in Edmonton, Alberta. Great guy, one of the good guys that played the game, and seems like he's having a good time here in Edmonton.
Yeah, it sure does. And you know what's funny is John Tortorella said earlier today when he was talking to the media here in Vancouver, they were asking him about the Sedins because, again, it's perceived that it was a problem, the relationship between Tortorella and the Sedins, which he says is total hogwash because they get along great. And he said, when we're done in this game, and this is kind of how he said it, when we're done in this game, all we have left is the relationships, and that he values the relationship with Daniel and Henrik Sedin. So you're absolutely right. The relationships are key. Now let's talk about the Vancouver Canucks. Again, it is a storyline for Torts to come back here because this was the last place that he coached prior to coming to the Blue Jackets. He got fired from here, sat out a year. He had that incident with Calgary where he tried to get down the hallway to the visiting dressing room and go after Bob Hartley, the stuff we talked about when Calgary was in town just a couple of weeks ago. But for the Blue Jackets, it's more, and I'm sure that he'll be the first guy to say, look, it's not about me. This isn't my story coming here. It's about my team getting consistent, like we talked about in the first segment.
Well, yeah, and that's his focus. I mean, any media scrum that he's in, he's focused on his team. It's a nice way to deflect from talking about the other team, too. And, you know, I think as a leader, that's what you want. You want your coach to be focused on what you guys are doing. It kind of it gives you less to think about when you hear your coach say, hey, we don't worry about them. We worry about us. And good leadership by him. Yeah, obviously returning to a home city, I know as a player, there's mixed emotions. You know, you wanted to work out in that city that you worked in. I'm sure Torts feels the same way. He looks at that jersey, those players, the forged relationships that he has with the Sedins, the trainers, some fans, this building. You know, he's going to be on the opposite bench here tomorrow. And all those things boil up in one kind of pot for him, and it'll be an emotional game to start. But, hey, the focus will be on his guys. Coming off a loss in Edmonton, he's looked at the video along with his coaching staff. The power play's got to get going. The consistency of playing a solid game, starting the game that way and continuing for the rest of the game is a key, and that's what they got to do. And I know fans are probably sick of hearing it, but that's really – it's such a day-to-day business. And listen, yesterday's under the rug. Today's a practice day. Tomorrow's a game day. And they're coming here to and the players will be fired up to beat the Canucks at home for Torts too. So the fans, I'm sure there'll be some interesting signs here. There always is in Vancouver. They used to have the guys that wore spandex over by the penalty box, those full body spandex suits, which no one should really wear ever. Well, definitely not you or I, Bob, but
you look great on TV with that, by the way.
They got all those things going on. So it'll be an interesting night, but I'm sure the boys, the Blue Jackets, will rally and try to get this one for Torts.
Second and final meeting of the year between these two teams. They haven't gotten together since November 10th at Nationwide Arena. On that night, the Vancouver Canucks scored a 5-3 win. So we'll see if the Blue Jackets can split the season series with the Canucks tomorrow night. That's going to do it for this week's edition of The Inside Edge. Great to bring it to you today from Vancouver, British Columbia. For Jody Shelley, I'm Bob McElligott, and this is 97.1 The Fan.